to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Edwards Ham of Surrey, Virginia. For more information, you can go to surreyfarms.com. And that's S-U-R-R-Y farms.com. Welcome to Why We Cook on heritageradionetwork.com. I'm Erica Wides, your host. I'm a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in Manhattan. And you are listening to Why We Cook live on heritageradionetwork.com. But if you're not listening live, you may be listening in the future on an iTunes podcast. And remember that you can subscribe to the podcast too, so you don't ever miss an episode. So a long, long, long time ago, way back at the beginning of human consciousness, when we were still roaming the savanna of Africa in tribes and hunting for our food, before we discovered cooking or invented cooking, when we were still eating raw meat and berries and nuts and roots and bark and bugs. So way, way, way back when, one night, somebody forgot to put the leftovers away. Some tribe had made dinner. There was some leftover food. It was somebody's job to pack up the leftovers and put them away, and he or she forgot. And whatever those leftovers were, maybe some gazelle milk or some overripe, juicy, long extinct berry or some fresh giraffe meat, whatever it was, the guy who was responsible for putting away the leftovers after dinner forgot. Maybe he was distracted by a herd of antelope, or maybe there were some really good stars on view in the sky that night, but that food sat out overnight. And no animals ate it, miraculously, and it was just cool enough out that night that it didn't rot. And in the morning, or a couple days later, when they found it again, that food had magically changed into something else. It had transformed itself. Something even more tasty, easier to eat, easier to digest. Maybe something that gave that tribe a little buzz. And they said, hey, we should do this more often. This is like magic. This food tastes great. And that, my friends, is the story of fermentation and how fermentation of our food was discovered a long, long time ago, basically by accident. So tonight's episode of Why We Cook is a continuation of the fermentation discussion, which we've been having for a very long time. And we have a guest in the studio tonight. We have Mike Schwartz, my colleague from ICE, who owns Kombucha Bao, fresh kombucha made in Hell's Kitchen. And Mike's in studio. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Erica.
We're going to be talking to Mike a little bit more in the second segment about what kombucha is. But kombucha is a fermented probiotic food. It's a naturally made product. It's basically a tea-based product. And we'll be talking to Mike a little bit later on the show. So anyway, back to that tribe in Africa. So they left that food out. It fermented. It rotted, basically. But it's controlled rot. And it turned into something great. So if you leave food or beverages out in a cool, damp place with just the right conditions, eventually they spoil and they rot. But if you control the rot, if you control the circumstances with maybe enough salt or enough acid added to them, they'll turn into something else completely. That's what cheese is, and yogurt and sauerkraut and salami and wine and beer and bread and miso and a million other foods. They're all just controlled spoilage foods. And so over the millennia, the process has evolved, and every generation has slowly tweaked it and fine-tuned it and refined the science and learned how to control the process so well of the preservation that all these different foods were created throughout human history that served a purpose. They were not only very good for you, but they also allowed people to preserve their food for the long term, because in the era before refrigeration, you had to preserve your food, otherwise you would starve in the winter. And this went on right up until the late 19th century when refrigeration was invented. And then refrigeration came along and basically spoiled the controlled spoilage party. Now, refrigeration is a really great thing. Don't get me wrong. I love a good refrigerator. It keeps food fresh for a really long time, and it allows us to transport food all across the world, which isn't always a great thing. But, you know, refrigeration gives us lemons in New York and blue cheese in Vietnam. But it also makes things really easy for us. It makes us sort of lazy. And it maybe makes us take freshness for granted. All those methods invented by humans for hundreds of thousands of years for keeping foods edible for the long haul was, you know, all those methods were made totally obsolete by a box with an electrical cord attached to it. Luckily, though, we have retained a taste for those non-refrigerated foods, and we still appreciate their health benefits enough to keep those traditions alive and thriving. And now we're kind of in the midst of a handcrafted artisan food movement. So many of those techniques have come back, some better than ever, more refined than ever, you know, sort of come back with a vengeance, which is great, in my opinion. If you are a regular listener to the show, you may remember that a few months ago in the depths of winter, I did a whole show on cabbage and fermentation and talked about how utterly simple it is to take fresh cabbage, add some salt, and ferment it into a big tasty pile of sauerkraut, which, if you're living in cold northern Europe or eastern Europe, was a food that you would really need to survive to get through the winter, because it would be your only source of vitamin C, and those probiotics in there would keep you really healthy, and it may have been the only vegetable you would have eaten from probably November to June. So having that big pile of sauerkraut around was really going to basically keep you alive if you were an Alsatian peasant or somebody living in Russia like my ancestors. So you may remember that show, and you may also remember that I love to talk about fermentation. I'm a little bit obsessed with it. I think it's really fascinating. I don't think everybody shares this fascination, but I think it's pretty interesting. And it's not just the process of fermentation that I find so fascinating, but also what it yields, the food that we get from it, I think is amazing, that you have this simple microbacterial reaction that turns something really simple like a head of cabbage into something really interesting like a big pile of sauerkraut or kimchi or a million other things. And I also think what's really interesting is how people figured it out. How did people figure out one day, like, oh, let's take this food and sprinkle salt on it or bury it in the ground or wrap it in leaves or, you know, put horse poop on it or something and then let it sit around for a couple months and then eat it down the road. First of all, that they were brave enough to actually taste it at that point. But I suppose hunger makes you motivated to taste a lot of things. But, you know, they sort of over thousands of years figured out these techniques. I think that's really fascinating, too. We basically owe the art of pickling and of cabbage fermenting to Asia and the Chinese. And so many fermented foods originate with the Chinese. I mean, pretty much the Chinese invented everything. Pretty much everything. And I mean, even all of our food and all of our cooking techniques and everything, we can, you know, we can sort of trace them back to like ancient Rome, but we can really trace them back to ancient China. And they were pickling and salting vegetables thousands of years before the Europeans figured it out. You know, when my ancestors were still like pounding each other with clubs in caves somewhere, you know, in Russia, the Chinese were making fermented cabbage and building empires. So it kind of all goes back to them. They also, of course, you know, were masters of fermenting soy products like soy sauce and forms of miso, soy pastes, things like fish sauce, shrimp paste. All of that stuff that we kind of take for granted now was developed and evolved over thousands of years of probably trial and error. And of course, we owe kombucha to the Chinese. They were probably the first ones to ferment tea and make it into beverages. And if you're not familiar with what kombucha is, just wait, because in the next segment, we will be talking a lot with Chef Michael Schwartz, who is my colleague from ICE, who has just started a kombucha company. So we'll be right back in the second segment to talk about that. listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Edwards Ham of Surrey, Virginia. For more information, go to surreyfarms.com. Welcome back to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Erica Wides, your host. And joining me tonight on Why We Cook is Chef Mike Schwartz. Yay! Of the Institute of Culinary Education. Mike is my friend and colleague, and we've been teaching together at ICE for like 10 years?
Yeah, 10 years.
Since we were like 14 years old, basically. That's when we started there. And Mike is a co-founder of Bao Organics, a company that makes fresh kombucha in Hell's Kitchen, right?
Correct.
So Mike and I have been teaching together a long time, and he started kind of playing around with kombucha a couple years ago, and now he started a company. And how long have you guys actually been producing?
We have been producing for about 8 months, mm-hmm. and we've been selling it for about 4 months. Mm-hmm. We received our license from the Department of Agriculture, the New York Department of Agriculture, beginning of the year. And then we started to get into a number of local stores, and it's taken off like crazy. We're now found in Gourmet Garage all over the city, so
that's great.
Becoming really popular.
Yeah, and actually some of our students this week are at Gourmet Garage handing out samples, so you can go in and visit them and get samples from them. So I think probably what we should do is start off with talking about what kombucha actually is, because I think a lot of people who listen to this station probably know what kombucha is and probably already drink it, but I think there are probably a lot of people who don't know what it is. So why don't you give us the rundown, the detailed description of what kombucha actually is.
Okay. you start off very well in the last segment. It's from Western China, we think. It was invented about 2,500 years ago. And what it basically is a fermented tea. Originally, it was made with black tea and sugar and allowed to culture with a bacteria. Now people make it with black tea, green tea. People have tried it with a lot of different products. But the most success is found with either black or green tea.
So can you do it with other vegetal matter, like rhubarb tea or other
you can,
herbs?
You tend not to get the same flavor profile. And depending on what you use, you end up with a lot of sulfur compounds, which aren't necessarily as pleasant to eat mm-hmm. or drink. So we found the nicest flavor profile comes from a mixture of black and green tea mm-hmm. And sugar, and we let the tea steep, and then we add our culture to it.
Is that the scooby?
That is the scooby, right? It's a
which I just found out today is an acronym.
Correct.
I didn't realize that was an acronym.
We call it a scooby because it's fun to say scooby.
But it's actually like SCOBY, right?
Right, only it's one SCOBY, yeah. Right.
So what does it stand for?
It's a symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeasts.
Okay.
So it's actually of its own little ecosystem. And the SCOBY, or the SCOBY, is a byproduct of the bacteria. And it forms kind of a cellulose mass that floats on top of the kombucha. Some people find it not so great to look at, but it's a sign of a healthy culture, and it's what people look for when they are brewing kombucha.
Mm-hmm. Some people call it a mushroom.
Correct.
But it's not really.
It is not a fungus, no. It's a combination of yeast and bacteria.
Right. It's like a cloud.
And so it's its own little ecosystem.
How's it different from a vinegar mother?
It's similar in that some of there's a similar bacteria. The vinegar mother is an individual strain of bacteria, which can be one of the bacteria in the kombucha culture.
Uh-huh.
The difference is that this culture also has some yeasts,
right?
And it can have a number of different types of bacteria. So, say in vinegar, you're only getting the one bacteria, which then is usually pasteurized. So you don't get the benefits of the probiotic.
Mm-hmm.
This has a number of has a whole range of bacteria and yeast in the culture. So when you drink the kombucha, you get this great variety of microflora added to your digestive system, which mm-hmm. is one of the main reasons that people drink it.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's like eating yogurt.
Correct. Exactly. Like eating yogurt.
So you brew your tea and then you add the culture, and then how long is the process?
Well, as you know from teaching sanitation, the bacteria needs food and temperature and time. So depending on what temperature you keep the culture, you can speed up or slow down the fermentation. Mm-hmm. It can take anywhere from 9 to 14 days.
Is it like when you make bread, like the longer, slower fermentation of your bread dough gives you better flavor? Is it like that, like colder and slower is better?
To a point. Yeah.
If it's too cold, it won't.
The yeasts like to live at a cooler temperature, 50, 60, even 70 degrees. They thrive better, and the bacteria kind of go dormant that cold. Mm. So you really want to be above 80 degrees, but below, we're finding below 85 for us is our best temperature. So warmer than that, and you get a different flavor profile, and cooler than that, you get a different flavor profile. I forget what the question was.
Yeah, about temperature and low and slow.
So to an extent, low and slow.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And so you ferment it, and then I guess you strain it, right? I mean, you don't sell it with the bacteria culture in it.
Well, we don't sell it with the cellulose mass with the SCOBY in it.
Right, the mat, the actual.
Right. We strain that out.
Goop.
And the yeast cells also die during the process, and so they collect at the bottom, just like when you're making wine.
Wine, yeah.
And we strain those out as well. But it is a live culture. So even though you don't see them,
they're in there.
They continue to grow, and they add a little bit of sparkle when you open the bottle. And the flavor of the kombucha continues to change even in the refrigerator over time. So one of the advantages to our product, we think here in New York, it's a local product. It is fermented. It goes in the bottle, and then you can buy it in the store the next couple of days.
Right. So up until, like, how long? Like, what's, do you put an expiration date on it?
We recommend 2 months. Mm-hmm. But after 2 months, the flavor starts to change a little bit. It's still fine to drink. It's totally healthy.
I have some in my fridge from the last half gallon I got from you. It's pretty
fine.
Old.
No, it's fine.
I drank most of it.
It will taste bad before it goes bad. Okay. It'll start to get much more sour.
Okay.
Bad, but sour.
Right. It's sort of like milk. Like when milk goes bad, so-called bad, you can actually still drink it.
Right.
It just tastes
Or when terrible. Yogurt goes bad.
Yeah.
Bad.
Bad, which takes forever with yogurt. Okay. So what should I ask you next? How did you guys begin? I mean, where did this all come from? Like, what made you do this? What was the motivation? What got you into it?
As you are, I'm fascinated with fermentation. I think it's a... excuse me.
It's the beer we've been drinking.
Right. Fermentation.
Speaking of fermentation. And it's so hot in here that I feel like I'm fermenting in my own sweat. Right. But anyway.
The health benefits of any fermented foods, and the more variety you eat of them, the better, obviously.
Right.
Led us to... because we also teach a lot of nutrition classes at ICE.
Right.
I started to do a lot of research into nutrition, and one of the things that is bothering me so much right now is the increase in type 2 diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
And the excessive, high fructose corn syrup and sugar, and it's just out of control.
Soda,
So my business partner, whose name is Mike also, and I got together, and we wanted to create some... we wanted to produce something. We didn't create anything. It's been around. But we wanted to produce something that was going to be helpful for people, right? In addition to making a good business, would be really good for people and would taste good. So we started playing around with a lot of different recipes of fermented beverages. And then we came upon kombucha. And at the same time, we started drinking it and noticed... you feel a lot better, that we started to feel a lot better. So we thought it'd be a great product, and we started to experiment, and which eventually last September ended up, we rented a space in Hell's Kitchen and started to go commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a product that we really like, and we hope everybody else really likes.
Yeah, and I mean, it's really, Gourmet Garage picked you up, which is major. I mean, that's in New York, that's a huge thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We are going to take another very short break. I know, it's time already. Can you believe
that's it? That's amazing.
Yeah, and when we come back, we'll talk some more about kombucha and fermentation and all that kind of stuff. We'll be right back. Listening to Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by Edwards Ham of Surrey, Virginia. For more information, go to surreyfarms.com. Welcome back to Why We Cook on heritageradionetwork.com. I'm Erica Wides, your host. I'm an instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in Manhattan. And remember that you can always listen to Why We Cook or any other Heritage Radio Network show on our website, heritageradionetwork.com. They're all archived there. Or you can subscribe to podcasts and listen to us anytime that you like. Put us on your little device and take us with you. We're always there for you. So tonight on Why We Cook, we're talking about fermented beverages, specifically kombucha. And my colleague, Mike Schwartz, is in the studio with us tonight. And he is the co-founder of Bao Organics, which is a company that makes fresh kombucha in Hell's Kitchen, New York. So in the previous segment, we kind of talked about what kombucha is and how you guys started and how you make it. But now let's sort of talk about why you should drink it. You know, everybody throws around this word probiotics now. You know, you see Jamie Lee Curtis hawking Activia on TV, which to me is a big scam, Activia, because it's full of all kinds of crap.
That's basically funny. I've never picked up the label to read it, actually. It just wouldn't occur to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's got, you know, colors and thickeners.
There's so many other great yogurts out there.
I know.
That are local and that have only milk and bacteria.
I know, just buy yourself some good yogurt. Or make your own. Wade did a whole show on yogurt a few weeks ago and how to make your own. But I mean, not everybody's going to make their own yogurt. But, you know, buy yourself just decent, organic, plain yogurt. And you're going to get all the probiotics you need.
Right.
You don't need the, anyway, marketing scams. Don't get me started on that. But anyway, so kombucha obviously is a probiotic food because it's fermented and it's alive.
Correct.
You know, it's like eating miso or eating good yogurt or, you know, cheese. It has live active culture in it.
Correct.
So why? Why should we eat those? I mean, what does it do for us?
Well, your digestive system to function well needs to have the microflora, the bacteria, the good beneficial bacteria replaced every once in a while.
Right.
And so you constantly are doing this. I actually have an 8-month-old baby, and the doctor recommended that we put some probiotic powder in his formula. Mm. And people, it's starting to be recognized by everyone now that you need this microflora replaced on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Like eating kimchi.
Like eating kimchi or eating sauerkraut or eating
yogurt or miso
or non-pasteurized beer or anything.
Or raw milk.
Or raw milk.
Right.
And we like kombucha as one of those options, not the only option, but it's definitely one of those options because it's easy to get your hands on.
Yeah.
It's very refreshing. It's, you know, it's great after a workout or... But it's not exclusive. I mean, you want a wide variety of bacteria, and that's the key.
Right, right. But for people who maybe like live your typical hectic New York on the run life, who don't eat very well, it's a really good way to get.
It's an easy way. You just grab a bottle and you know,
and it tastes really good too. Right. I mean, you have to mention that it's actually a really nice, tasty beverage, and not sweet. It's a teeny bit sweet, but not cloyingly sweet like other. Like, I'm not a beverage person. You know, I just drink water because I can't drink soda. I hate it. I don't like anything that's really sweet. But I really like your kombucha because it has a lot of good flavor, but there isn't any, like, sickly, syrupy sweetness. And right. I refuse to ingest any artificial sweeteners, you know, so.
Right.
If I want something other than water.
Right. And that's, you know, that's one of our goals, is to make really good tasting things that are very low in sugar. There is some residual sugar that's left over. The yeast and bacteria take care of the majority of it. Mm-hmm. There is a little bit left, which gives it a hint of sweetness.
Right. It's like just enough, though.
And it's nice and tart, which is really refreshing, especially right now in this studio. It's so nice and warm.
It's like 110 degrees in here.
So, you know, it's a great addition to your healthy diet.
Yeah.
And
yeah, and I mean, part of the problem with us, you know, it's typical American diet, of course, is full of problems, but one of them is that everything is so ultra pasteurized and sanitized that people don't get the live active cultures they're supposed to get. Nobody's eating raw milk or raw milk cheeses or, you know, any of that stuff anymore, which we used to be, you know, not us, but our ancestors were exposed to that sort of stuff constantly, living on farms and right. living agrarian lifestyles. You were exposed to way more bacteria. And we don't get that
right.
anymore.
Right. There's obviously a need for sanitation and cleanliness, but right. but it's sometimes taken to an excess. And
yeah.
And when you pasteurize, and we were talking about Louis Pasteur right. during the break,
yeah.
You know, you kill off the pathogens, which is really important, but you also kill off the beneficial bacteria, the probiotics. And
yeah.
so you have to find a way to get them back into your system.
Right. Right. And if you just live a typical life of cooked, just sterilized food, you're just never going to get them. So I'm so hot, I can't think. I just lost my train of thought. What was I going to ask you about? I don't remember. Oh, no, that wasn't it. Oh, no, I'm losing it. So how much should people drink? Like, I mean, we were talking about this on the train on the way over.
Right,
you know,
right.
Because when I got some from you and I started drinking it, and it accelerated my digestive system, let's say, to put it politely. You know, what should you start out with if you haven't been drinking it? Should you drink a full bottle the first day? Should you start off sort of slowly?
You just have to play it by. It's yeah. trial and error. I mean, yeah. I drink two at least bottles worth a day mm-hmm. when I, you know, taste all the fermentation vessels. You know, there are a large number of people that drink two bottles a day. We like to say take a bow every day. It's something that you have to decide for yourself. But it, you know, with that said, it's like anything else, right? Moderation is the key to a healthy diet.
Yeah.
So, you know, any food that you eat in excess, and I always tell my students about, I had a working partner in culinary school who was, went on a carrot diet. Right?
Did he turn orange?
She turned orange, yes.
Yeah, carotene poisoning.
Yeah, carotene poisoning, exactly. And so, like, carrots are great for you.
Right, but not.
But in moderation. So everything right. in moderation. So if you're drinking, you know, one bow a day and a couple of bottles of water a day and right. or glasses of water a day and a little bit of juice, you know, that's a great
right.
great way to regulate your hydration.
Right. Balance it out. Get your vitamins.
But if you drink, you know, four Gatorades or four bowls or four whatever. Right.
It's sodas.
Right. It's
yeah.
It's,
that's like, you know, teaching at ICE, I'm always horrified because the students have access to a soda machine, which we've all been fighting against for years, but that they'll go out there throughout the course of a 4-hour class and drink, you know, 2-3 sodas.
Diet Cokes.
Diet right. Cokes or so, regular Cokes.
Okay,
yeah.
So if that's your diet, then you're going to be much better off drinking 4 bottles of Bao than 4 Diet Cokes.
Diet Cokes, right. Right. But the amount of sugar in the regular Coke and the, you know, sweetened Coke
right.
is like, it's mind boggling. I mean, I think they said the average American now consumes like 30 teaspoons of sugar a day.
Yeah. Which amounts to something like 30 pounds or something.
What a year, 30 pounds a year. Something like that.
Some crazy number.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, talk about childhood obesity. All you have to do is take away the soda, I think,
right.
and it would probably solve the
right.
problem.
And so we offer this beverage, right, which is tasty and refreshing and doesn't add all that extra sugar to your diet, which is, we think, is a good thing.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think it's a great thing. I mean, and it's interesting because so many cultures have naturally occurring probiotics as just regular daily parts of their diet. And somehow here in the U.S., we've just eliminated that. You know, I was in Korea over the winter and, you know, I mean, it's all about kimchi. I mean, and in like 50 different varieties, and it's at every meal, and it's just right. a normal part of your day, and also a fermented bean paste. It's just a part of every meal, or right. like in Japan with miso and other fermented soy products, it's just there, and everybody eats it. Or in Eastern Europe, it's all about pickles. It's like, for some reason, in the U.S., we've right. like gotten
and
away from
and
that.
And even our pickles that we
right.
make here
are pasteurized.
They're pasteurized yeah. pickles. They're not natural pickles anymore.
Right.
So
yeah,
I mean, you know, this to me fits into this whole thing about getting, you know, eating closer to the earth,
right.
eating more locally, and eating closer to the earth, and eating things less processed, and it all works together to make a more healthy person.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we're about to run out of time, but you know, there's all this stuff now about also with childhood food allergies and other allergies and asthma, and how they're thinking that now that's all being caused by kids growing up in environments that are too sterile, and they're mm-hmm. not coming in contact with the right bacteria when they're babies, and their guts aren't being colonized by these bacteria that then stimulate their immune system. So like when kids were born and they would go out and crawl around in the dirt when they were babies, they would actually ingest worms that live naturally in the soil, and the worms get into your digestive system and trigger an immune response that prevents you from getting allergies and asthma. But now that we're not crawling around in the dirt anymore, right? And kids who grew up on farms who are surrounded by farm animals and are breathing in farm animal, you know, poop and dust and hay and all of this stuff also have much lower incidences of allergies and asthma. So it's pretty interesting. So you should take Gabe, your little baby Gabe,
right.
take him out to the farm, let him right. crawl around in the poop. Anyway, unfortunately, we have run out of time. I was going to talk about my bees, and we ran out of time, but Mike and I went up on the roof and we checked the bees before the show, and they're doing incredibly well. They're thriving. We just added the second deep box to the hive, and that is the box that the bees will now fill up with honey for themselves. And as soon as that one's filled up, then I can put on the shallow, and that's going to be my honey, which hopefully I'll get enough of that then I can give some to Mike and he can use it to make his kombucha. So anyway, we're out of time. Thank you so much for coming on, Mike. It was
Thanks
great
for having
to
me.
Have you here and talk
it was
about
great being here.
Kombucha and helping me with the bees. And we're out of time, so we'll see you next week on Why We Cook. Thanks for listening, and have a good week.